Morning, and I'd like to call this meeting of House Fisheries to order. It's 8:05, and this will be our final meeting for the year. And remind everybody of their cell phones and recognize that Rep. Gaddis, Rep. Heron, Rep. Feige, and myself, Chair Seaton, are here. And today we are here for introducing House Bill 386, and that bill is not, we're not going to take any action on that bill today. The intention of this bill is to have a discussion. This was really stimulated by the reality of constraining budgets, the cuts that were instituted in Department of Fish and Game by the governor's office and then added to by the House were hard to sustain this year, and so it's going to be even worse next year, as we all know. And so what we're doing is looking at consolidation and trying to figure out if there's a more economical way to provide for the services of the state without harming the management and ability of the state to manage its fisheries. When we come to the position of having to take out sonars, take weirs out, reduce the manager's in-season ability to maximize use of our fisheries for the people of Alaska, then we are in the position of having to look at all of government. There is nothing in this, intended or otherwise, in the, having this hearing and having this introduction of a bill to denigrate in any way the job that the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission has done. And so I want to put that on the record right up front to make sure that everybody understands. We do have some parallel licensing things that are going on in two different departments. Question is, could those be done in one? What about the other functions? It's been quite a while since we've had any other fisheries to put limited entry on. And so I think the last one was 2004. The caseload, as Mr. Trombley, as he came before the committee, and or Commissioner Trombley, stated was getting much less. And so what we're trying to do is figure out what is the timeline. If we are going to create such a consolidation, we want it to have it done in a very measured and logical way and not have a budget constraint at the last moment throw everything into chaos. So that determination hasn't been made. We've requested a legislative budget and audit to look at potential how the CFEC works and whether consolidations would be advantageous or not. That is not predetermined at all in this time. So what we're going to do today is really introduce the bill. It's not a simple bill because it's, you know, 46 pages long, and there's 118 sections. So there's a lot to change when you're doing this. But if we didn't have a bill, people wouldn't understand all of the parts and the moving pieces for a conversation before the next legislature where such action might be necessary. So there are two ways in which this consolidation can take place. One is by legislative action. We in the legislature can create or abolish departments. Also, administratively, reorganization can be done. We're putting this on the table not to preempt in any way the governor's ability to consolidate on his own, but to put the issues out in a logical manner with all of the statutory changes that would be required so that people can look at all of those myriad of interactions that would have to take place, and we'll see what comes out of this meeting and we'll see what comes out in the next legislature as far as if we do decide to go forward with something, how we can do it in an efficient and logical manner so as not to disrupt fisheries or the duties of the CFEC and whether that really could integrate as a division of the Department of Fish and Game. So with that said, that's the context of this meeting. We have it for invited testimony so that the CFEC, ADF&G, legal, and the Hearing Office of Administrative Hearings can all be here. And so before we go forward, I wanted to recognize that Representative Christ Tompkins had joined us, and I'll have my staff, Mr. Louis Flora, give us a little round out. And I'll also mention that on the sponsor statement, there was on the very bottom, it said 389, and that should be 386. It's just a typo on there. There's not two bills. So we're looking at House Bill 386. Everyone should have the sponsor statement, should have the sectional analysis, and a little bit of backup. We didn't want to overwhelm with paperwork. Would you put yourself on the record and give us
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. My name is Louis Flora. I'm staff to the House Fisheries Committee and to Representative Seaton. And I apologize for the typos in the sponsor statement undertaken in the twilight hours of yesterday. I just wanted to provide a little background on the documentation you have before you. And I wanted to start out by saying the overarching theme of this discussion is, do we need to maintain a separate commission to handle limited entry into fisheries when no new limited entry fishery has been established in 10 years? The commission itself was established after the 1972 voter approval of the Limited Entry Act. And in 1973, the legislature enacted the Limited Entry Act, creating the state's limited entry program and giving the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission the responsibility for administering the program. Just for a little background, before we get into the other numbers, I provided the document CFEC 2012 annual report, just so you can see the duties on page one of the commission. The commission serves as a regulatory and quasi-judicial agency of the state. Three commissioners are appointed by the governor and confirmed by the legislature. Commission staff is organized into five sections. We have administration, adjudications, research and planning, licensing, and information technology. And as you can see in this document, in their 2012 annual report, the commission is charged with establishing maximum number of entry permits for fisheries to be limited, processing entry permit applications and adjudicating claims, issuing annual reports in both limited and open access fisheries, processing requests for emergency and permanent transfers, as well as research and coordination with state and federal management agencies in developing fisheries policies. Between 1974 and 2013, entry permits have been issued in a total of 65 commercial fisheries. We have 26 salmon fisheries, 19 herring fisheries, 9 crab fisheries, 5 sablefish fisheries, 3 shrimp fisheries, and 3 dive fisheries. To date, a total of 79 permit types have been issued for 65 limited fisheries. Now, in the document before you, which is entitled Changes in the Distribution of Alaska's Commercial Fisheries Entry Permits, 1975 to 2013, if you can open that, you can get kind of a sense of the historic sweep of the Limited Entry Act and the effects of it on Alaska fisheries. You can note that we began in 1975, and through every year subsequent, we've had a large amount of fisheries that have been limited down through the decades, ending in 2004. And 2004, we have the Kodiak Tanner Baradai Pot fishery, and that was the last fishery that has been limited in Alaska. And so looking into the future, we have future fisheries limitations that could occur, but it's anticipated that these will be relatively small fisheries as low participation numbers. We have the Togiak seine herring as a potential, and different Pacific cod fisheries are some future limitations. But the staff, what question, I guess, for the commission would be what staff level is required to research and administer any new fishery limitation? And is the commission an appropriate structure for today's fisheries limitations in Alaska? And another document I wanted to draw your attention to is the document that has a graph on the front page, and it's pulled and it's a compilation of the annual report starting in 1998, and it's a comparative, so I didn't draw it every single year, but I went from 1998 and ended with an email on the last page from the Mr. Frank Glass, who's the CFEC adjudication officer, and I asked him, because the 2013 annual report is not yet online, so I asked for those numbers. We can see in looking at the front and the back page there and the pages in between that commission caseload has significantly declined from the heyday of limitations in Alaska fisheries in the 1970s, 80s, and 90s. And in this document, you'll see on page 1 in 1998, the commission adjudicated 105 permit cases, 42 transfer cases, and 10 miscellaneous cases. And when we compare that with the figure on the last page in the email I referenced, for 2013, the commissioners adjudicated a total of 6 cases, 3 entry permit applications, 2 permit transfers, and 1 remand to the from the adjudication section. And so that's a total of 6 cases, not 6 plus those numbers. 7 permit applications are pending before hearing officers currently at CFEC. So after the hearing officer issues a decision on these 7 cases, these cases will be passed to the commission for review. So the commissioner's total future caseload is about 30 cases at this point. So if you compare this back to 1998, there were 227 cases before the commissioners and 363 cases before the adjudication staff. So I just wanted to close with this discussion and talking about the compelling evidence to bolster the argument that the caseload is decreasing is that the governor has not, at this point, appointed a third commissioner since the vacancy left by the previous commissioner, which was in 2012, I believe. This is, as you said, Mr. Chair, not to denigrate the work that the commission has done. It's done its job well. They've argued their cases successfully, and the cases are not being returned from the Supreme Court, and they have, as a commission, succeeded in their mission. You do have a document on House Bill 386 before you, which is the sectional analysis. Generally, in the bill, there is a great deal of conforming amendments. I'm happy to attempt to go through each one of them if you'd like. We do have Alpheus Bullard from Legislative Legal online if there are any questions. And that concludes my discussion this morning.
Thank you. Other questions? Representative Herron.
So, Louis, thanks for a thorough introduction. I guess my question is what was the epiphany or the genesis of this? And there's an old adage, if it's not broken, why fix it?
Through the chair, Representative Herron, I would defer to the bill sponsor on that.
And Representative Herron, I was also on Fish and Game Finance Subcommittee. Very tough decisions were made regarding ADF&G budget. We know there's going to be future cuts in ADF&G budget, commercial sports subsistence. There was no cut proposed this last year to CFEC. It does have independent funding coming from permits, but the question is, the state is looking at fiscal problems, and so what we're looking at here is making sure that the state can be as most efficient in accomplishing not only its issuance and renewal of permits, but also its management of the fisheries to fulfill the obligations that we have under Section 8 of the Article 8 of the Constitution. So that's a total genesis of this. I have no problems with the job that the CFEC has done in getting permits, but when the testimony is to us that there were six cases this last year, the question is, can we do that more efficiently and effectively? We needed to have a hearing to find out publicly whether the hearing officer adjudications that are performed through CFEC are so different that they need separate hearing officers than are provided by the Office of Administrative Hearings. So that's the genesis of this. Before we get into next year and have other really tough, tight budget decisions to make, and we haven't had the discussion ahead of time, can we do things more efficiently? It would be very difficult to try and take this kind of an action, from my view, during a legislative session without having had a thorough discussion and seen the steps forward during the interim. And so, and I did want to recognize that Representative Olson has joined us quite some time ago. So, are there any other questions for? Yes, Representative Kreisch-Thompkin.
I share Representative Herron's caution, I guess, in approaching something that seems to work really well. And I'm wondering, with this bill, if the reason for proposing this bill is cost savings or efficiency, what are the proposed savings of integrating CFEC into ADF&G, and can those same savings not be realized by simply downsizing CFEC to a size proportional to its caseload and activity?
Through the chair, Representative Kreisch-Thompkins, I believe there is representatives from CFEC as well as Fish and Game in the audience that could speak to those efficiencies that could be found on either, either move.
And just to address that point, the reason for this hearing, the reason this bill is here at the last of the session so that there's no attempt to move this bill, is to get that discussion and find out if there is a mechanism for doing that or if it doesn't make sense. So this is not prejudged that we're going to do something. This is to get that discussion with all the parties that would have to be involved at this at the table. Representative Olson.
Is it your intent to have hearings during the interim?
Representative Olson, I'm not sure. It'll partly depend on where we are in this discussion today, whether when we're hearing on the record from CFEC, law, ADF&G, as to whether this is something that could work or not work. It might become obvious that it doesn't work and we need to do what Representative Kreisch-Thompkins is suggesting in downsizing CFEC significantly. I don't know if that's going to be there. I just think that there's going to be severe budget constraints next year, and I don't believe that CFEC, from the discussions I've had, will be held harmless, and we want to make sure that the job can get done. And so haven't made that determination yet, Representative Olson.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you. So let's go to CFEC directly, and we only have one mic. We can have both of you up at the table and swap mic back and forth. If that would be, I think, easier here if we can arrange that. And welcome. I appreciate both of you coming in to participate in the discussion. If you would put yourselves on the record, and then as we have this discussion and go back and forth, if you just say your name before you, because there are two male voices, so the secretary needs just the name so they know who's talking.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Bruce Twomley, chair of the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission, and I'm joined by...
I'm Benjamin Brown, and I'm a commissioner on the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission, and the secretary always knows it's me because I'm speaking more rapidly than anyone else on the audio recording, so... Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Trauma, let me just give you the mic, and maybe you can talk to us a little about the commission. I know you were here for your confirmation hearing. We didn't really go into how the commission functioned very much, but if you could give us that background somewhat, and then go ahead and proceed with how this is a bad idea or a good idea, whether it would work or would be more difficult than downsizing if there were budget cuts needed, those kind of, all of those issues. So it'd be helpful. I'll just give you the open mic and go ahead.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to. And I appreciate your characterization that this is the conversation starter. I mean, we are at the very beginning of the conversation, and I guess it's been noted, at least in some of your other comments, that the Commission sells licenses, the Department of Fish and Game sells licenses. Both are supported by IT, and therefore, let's consider a combination. It's the very beginning of that conversation, and I think there will be time to address this in detail, but I think we're looking at two very different functions that would need to be explored. And I note from the bill, if there's something missing from the bill itself, it's setting out the standards for this going forward. But I think in your comments as a sponsor, and I think you have suggested that there are at least two basic questions that would need to be answered. One, is the proposed combination practicable? Or would it risk undermining some of the statutory, and in our case, constitutional functions that the legislature and the public may regard as important to continue? If the question on practicability is answered in the affirmative, then the question becomes, of course, is it actually going to save money in any meaningful way? And I think the thing I think will need to be explored in detail is the nature of the two functions in the two agencies. And you may find that they're not as parallel as you might suspect at the first glance. Now, two things I'd like to respond to from the opening remarks. In the presentation, the initial presentation by your staff, Mr. Chair, it was suggested that the Commission's production in 2013 was reduced to 6 cases from some 40 or something in the last couple of years. It's not quite the case, and I explained to you when we were together, unfortunately I've got a personal reason that intervenes on this, but we had one interrupting force last year that got in the way of completing these basic adjudications, and it was the last lap of the Carlson case. We're still in that. We had to commit a lot of time to class members who were in a position to request hearings from the Commission. We spent a lot of time on the phone actually deflecting those hearings and saving money in that process. But some hearings did go forward. Those are numbers that don't appear in these numbers. And then the thing I should mention, those figures noted that there were 41 cases from hearing officers and adjudication staff, but only 6 from the commissioners. We have a duty to review every one of those 41 cases and rule on them. That's a duty we normally would have completed by the end of the year, but for Carlson and but for me. I had a son in Honduras I hadn't seen in 2 years, so our family chose to go down during the Christmas holiday season, visit him. That's the time we normally would have wrapped those cases. And so that will mean that the 2013 cases, the Commission's production will swell by roughly that amount, at least 40. So it'll be a better showing than you have in front of you right now. And then the other thing I wanted to respond to, you noted that the Commission recently got a maintenance budget from the legislature, whereas the department was subject to some cuts. There are some things about the Commission's history and contribution to budget cuts I'd really like to briefly put on the record just to add to the perspective. We have in our history, and we're an exempt agency. We're a small exempt agency, exempt from the Personnel Act, so we can do some more, sometimes more creative, more productive things than agencies subject to the Personnel Act, also agencies that are union shops. We are not. We have, for some extended periods in the past, had to ask employees to take leave without pay. We have also, during certain periods, more often than not, asked our employees to forego merit increases. And I can give you one example. The commissioner's salaries were determined by statute by the legislature initially, and the commissioner's salaries were placed at the same level as district court judges, and it was because of the legislature's recognition that the decisions we make have as much impact as decisions that come from the district court. I mean, you folks, if anybody, you know how deeply people feel about their fishing rights. And so the legislature took that into account. They placed our salaries parallel to the district court judges set by statute. As history went forward, the district court judges got to improve their position with the help of the legislature. That didn't happen to the Commercial Fishery Entry Commission commissioners, including myself. We went 25 years without a merit increase. And I just note that because I think that's probably something that's unparalleled in state government. It's not a complaint. I mean, I've always been happy with my salary. I think it is generous, and it's not a complaint. But it's just noting something. It's an area where we helped contribute to balancing the budget. Another area where we've made major contribution is in cuts of employees. And the first cut that I remember making was of our executive director, a gentleman named Darrell. We were face-to-face in this one. And we cut the position of our executive director in order to meet budget cuts that were being visited upon us. What a cut like that means, along with every cut in an agency that's the size of a classroom, we have 28 full-time authorized positions at this point. What a cut like that means is that everybody surviving has to absorb the responsibilities of the position that we're cutting. So at the Entry Commission, it means that our administrative functions have been largely absorbed by other employees and distributed. It means that almost everybody at the commission is contributing to the substantive work of the commission under the statute and under the Constitution. Now, what this looks like over time is, if you go back to 1986, you can see that the commission was authorized 41 general fund full-time employees. Today, the number's 28. We've been reduced by more than 30% over the years. And I mean, we're doing the work, but it's a more than 30% reduction. I mean, I don't know how that looks from the standpoint of other agencies, but 30% is a big deal in an agency our size, and it means that effectively today we're doing more complex work and more work with fewer people. And I would say that we're reduced to a point where you see largely muscle and bone when you look closely at the commission. And you can see us at a glance. With 28 employees, you can visit the commission, you can tour in half an hour, you can see everything we're doing, we explain everything we're doing, which is really some statutory functions. But I think what I draw from our situation is that we're not the most likely source for meaningful budget cuts that will help address the state's problem today. We're probably not the greatest target to look at. That's it basically. I don't know how fertile we are when it comes to being a source of budget cuts. And then I would also like to say, because adjudications is a big part of our business, adjudications also represents a source of efficiency for the state. There have been 68 limited fisheries. I participated in 35 of those limits. There are 86 Alaska Supreme Court cases addressing applicants for limited entry permits. Now, for the sake of efficiency, it is critical that we win those appeals to the Alaska Supreme Court. There is nothing less efficient than losing a case, having it handed back to you, remanded for more work, or it can be worse, because there are also some terrible risks in the process. What the Supreme Court did to the Entry Commission that I haven't seen it visit on any other agency is it held that when it reverses a commission rule in one of its decisions, that reversal can be applied retroactively to require reopening previously closed applications, and also to requiring the commission to accept new applications from people who did not apply when they were eligible to apply. This means that with every decision we make, we're walking this tightrope where if we were to be reversed, if it were to be applied retroactively, we might succeed in undermining a limited fishery on which Alaskans rely for their livelihood and on which some other folks rely for simply containing commercial fishing. But the risks are big. Now, I'm happy to report that in the some 3,000 decisions I participated in, a large portion of those were applications, there has not been a retroactive reversal. And from 1996 forward, there have been 32 appeals to the Supreme Court. We have had only two partial reversals among those 32 appeals. And in both of those cases, we avoided a retroactive application because we were careful to limit our adjudications to the facts just affecting those particular individuals. So they didn't lend themselves to one of these retroactive applications. So there hasn't been one. It's something that we celebrate, but we have to it's something that we have to think about with every case that we decide among the remaining cases. And from the from those 68 limited fisheries, as your staff has noted, there will probably be more limitations generating more cases. But among the 68 limited fisheries, we have 30 of those cases left to decide. So we are we're in the last lap of this process. And so, I mean, what I would urge in the course of the conversation and the analysis is, I think that I would urge great care in reviewing the adjudication functions. We're on the verge of finishing up this segment of the work, and I think one should be careful about altering the adjudication process in a way that could hand a cause of action to attorneys representing these applicants. It's just late in the game to be assuming risks, but we do have, among those cases, we have a finite number of cases. My recommendation would be that that the process that exists go forward until we can achieve final determinations in those 30 cases, and then see what should develop from there. But that would be my recommendation.
Thank you. And I guess, you know, some of what we're looking at is the amount of activity. How many hearing officers do you have now?
We have two functioning right now.
And are those full-time?
Yes.
Full-time positions?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so I guess what we're trying to do is figure out the speed at which those are going to transpire. And I understand caseloads and going to the Supreme Court when there is no case law. I mean, when you guys started, there was no case law on this limited entry permit system at all, and now we've developed a number of pieces of case law. So the question on the adjudicatory hearings and your determinations, are most of those have Supreme Court precedent, or are these all issues that don't have Supreme Court case law addressing the issues that are before you?
It's certainly the case, Mr. Chairman, that some of the issues have been resolved, so there are cases we can rely upon. But there's this blind spot. The Supreme Court has a lot of discretion with every case, and they've reserved a lot of discretion in our cases. We've seen them exercise it. So we always have to be looking over our shoulder and watching out for this risk of a retroactive application. I mean, we have ways to deal with it, and we've had the benefit of the late Justice Rabinowitz's advice, which is when you're deciding factual claims, don't make unnecessary affirmative findings. That gives the court more discretion to reverse you. You want to confine your holdings to, has the applicant met his burden of proof? But even employing that approach, which we do, I mean, it was good advice. We've been following it. It's what has helped us achieve our success. Even following that, The court has a lot of discretion, and we can see that recently in the May case, the court is full of surprises and continues to be. But I showed you our attempt to meet the challenge, and it was when I shared with the committee a copy of our Koosman case. And that's where we are in the process now. I mean, when I say this is a critical stage, what was significant about the Koosman case was it only affected two applicants, but it actually resolved an entire fishery. There were another 13 applicants who were simply pending at a point level, waiting for this result to determine whether they would get their permits or not. So the decision, the fact that we denied the Koosmans, the fact that the Koosmans did not appeal, that was a break, meant that not only did these other 13 individuals get their permits, but we got to close out an entire fishery. So this is where we are in the process. I mean, we have a manageable caseload for the first time since 1990, and we're looking at a chance to close out some fisheries and get an end result and one that we can be confident about. But we still have to get past the Supreme Court in those appeals, and the Supreme Court can always surprise us, and it has.
Yeah, go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, if I could just add Benjamin Brown from the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission. I hope you all had a chance to review the case that Commissioner Twombly distributed at his confirmation hearing, because I can't emphasize enough how careful we were in our work on that to prevent a really horrible outcome, and we were successful, and we remain committed to putting that much thorough attention. And the records in these cases, you know, are transcripts of many, many pages and files full of fish tickets from long ago, each and every piece of which of evidence needs to be carefully weighed and looked at to produce a defensible result. And so I wanted to say I really hope you were able to review that decision, because I think it's illustrative of what Commissioner Twombly is saying. Thank you.
Thank you. And, you know, what we're looking at is there's basically 30 cases out there. You know, the question is, what speed are we going to progress through those? If we're deciding one a year, that's 30 years. If we're deciding six a year, you know, we're talking 5 years. If we're, you know, that's part of the question as well, is how rapidly are the hearing officers going through these at a rapid pace? We are going to be in a balancing act in budgetary constraints. And so what we're looking at is not being able to maintain Fish and Game doing its job as well as we think it should. So that's the context in which we're looking at this. I appreciate the thoroughness which this has gone forward. We were involved in the Carlson case for a long time. We know how difficult those things can be as far as going back from the Supreme Court. So there's no denigration on the job you've done. We're just trying to figure out where the timeline is and how we balance the different portions of state government. So I appreciate that. Are there questions for the commissioners? Is there anything else that either one of you would like to add, and then we'll get Fish and Game? And
if I may, Mr. Chairman, Ben Brown again. I just think, looking at the big picture context, of course, and looking at an already busy agency at Fish and Game, you know, not just the licensing and IT functions would have to be performed by staff who are already doing something there, but, you know, if Fish and Game annexed CFEC and then outsourced the hearing officer function to the Office of Administrative Hearings, there still has to be that additional level of review after hearing officer determination. And I see Deputy Commissioner Brooks back there, and you know, it might be on his desk that these files ended up landing for that final administrative review, and he's a busy man, so he would have to undertake going through these voluminous records and probably get up to speed in terms of the somewhat arcane nature of CFEC law. So you squeeze here and it, you know, expands out over here. And so I think you're cognizant of that, and that's why this conversation is helpful, because it's not, there's no wand to be waved that makes the difficult decisions go away. And I think you obviously have acknowledged that, so I just wanted to reemphasize that. Thank you, sir.
Because what I don't want to have is that wand waved in an immediate area and statutes get changed without full consideration and recognition and transitions and those things, if those would go forward. And I'm not, like I said at the beginning, no determination has been made. The reason this is out here is so that everybody can look at the complexity and whether it makes sense or not. So I really appreciate you guys, both of the commissioners, coming forward and addressing us today and figuring out how we can look forward to efficiencies and making sure that these remaining cases are resolved as quickly as possible, so that we're not having delays. And I'm not saying that you're delaying at all, but, you know, the hearing officers need to get their stuff done so that they can come to your desk as rapidly as possible, too.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for bringing us into the conversation. We're happy to participate.
Oh, thank you both very much. And let's get Kevin Brooks up next. Or, yeah, let's get Fish and Game up. Yeah, thanks. And then we'll go to the Office of Administrative Hearings. Or, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, Kevin Brooks, Deputy Commissioner for the Department of Fish and Game.
I know that you know, this was it's a big bill, 45 pages, a lot of conforming amendments, changing in statute titles and all, but there's also a lot of different duties that would be under this kind of a scenario transferred to the department, and as this was laying out a division. Can you give us just a broad sense, because we're not in the Department of Fish and Game, of whether this would be something that would work within the department, whether it's just outside of the bounds of what the department thinks it could handle, and any other thoughts you might have on this. And again, I just want to reiterate, we're not pushing this bill forward. There had to be some structure on the table to look at how things would be done. It may or may not be an appropriate structure. So that's the discussion we're having today. So.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. As you say, 45-46 page bill, I read it last night for the first time, and I think as many people in the room probably did. So I think as I thought about it and looking through the bill and the other material provided, you know, this is an agency, as has been documented by yourself and staff and the commissioners. You know, they've done great work. I think about the years dealing with that Carlson case for decades, and the years I started at Fish and Game in 1993, and the number of attorney generals that have worked on that case. You know, we have Vanessa in the room who's working on matters, but I think about the number of assistant AGs that came and went and worked on Carlson. But you know, in 40 years, has that agency evolved? Has their workload evolved? I think it's pretty evident. But what's the best fit, or what's the best path going forward? I'm not prepared to tell you that today. How would they fit in the Department of Fish and Game? That's something that would take a fair amount of assessment on our part. I mean, not only on the duties that you heard from Mr. Twombly and Mr. Brown about the complexities of the things they do, but how would something like that fit into the Department of Fish and Game? You know, there are similarities. So we, as it was stated, we issue licenses. And on first blush, we issue them to people, and they issue them to for vessels and skippers. So there's a licensing function. How similar are they? On first blush, it may seem pretty closely aligned, but as you dig in, you know, the devil's in the details. So we both have IT staff. We both have administrative staff. I think what you've suggested, and you mentioned legislative audit, we had a call from the Chris Curtis, legislative auditor. That seems to be a good approach forward, is to get a review, to get someone in there and take a look at it, an unbiased third-party review, and see, are they still fulfilling that function? Does it need to be changed? Because without that kind of analysis, I would not recommend a lot of a lot of effort on the front end without doing that kind of analysis and research. I think it's interesting, the administrative Office of Administrative Hearings. You know, I was around in the Department of Administration when OAH was formed. It brought together hearing officers from a number of departments. They handle a multitude of cases, types of cases, very complex. I'm interested to hear what their assessment is on you know, how the CFEC adjudications would fit within that structure. But it was that same kind of consideration, I think, a decade ago when OAH was formed, that you had hearing officers across departments and maybe you had some inconsistencies on how things were handled. And I think that's a model that's worked pretty well. So, again, I'll let Department of Administration speak to that. I just recognize it because of my time spent in that department as well. So, Mr. Chairman, just those are some general comments. I'd be happy to answer any questions. But
okay, thank you. And just reiterating, you know, what this is to place something on the table, to get thoughts going, to see what works, what doesn't. If we didn't have a potential here of looking at this, it would be hard to ask the Division of Audit to look at this without any context. And we're not seeking to audit CFEC just to audit CFEC as if we don't think they're doing their job, but to give the context of an audit and looking at the different functions and whether things, you know, whether, like you say, an independent third party from us who don't have the expertise to look at these departments and give suggestions. So that's so I appreciate that, and I appreciate that there's questions. One of the questions that was brought up by Commissioner Twomley was the adjudications or the elevations, and I think maybe what we'll do is, because I don't think anybody has the answers to those things, I don't think that taking division directors and putting them in that capacity would be the right thing. I think that's probably more within the Office of Administrative Hearings and some elevation. I don't know if that's in there. But we're definitely not saying the process is broken. We don't want it to get broken in any changes in the future. So if there's anything else you would like to add or any questions that we should look at as we go along this procedure.
I think one comment in just response to the legislative audit, and you make a very important distinction. We all state agencies are subject to audit and review of our financial records, and my understanding, and I think you've been very clear, is that this is more of a functional review, a performance audit, if you will, and not a financial or any suggestion that there's something amiss with the financial records of anything. So
I appreciate that. Anybody have any questions for Fish and Game? Seeing none, thank you for coming and being here. And can we have the Office of Administrative Hearings? And thank you for coming. And just for people's information, some members have had leave for other meetings. It's not, they've sent notes, it's not that they're disinterested. I'll follow it up later. Would you put yourself on the record and just let me say to begin with, I think that all of us are in the same position. We don't have any conception really of what you do or the breadth of how you conduct the hearings, whether there's a procedure that elevates from a single review to multiple hearing officers. So I think you see the complexity of what we're trying to do in here. And if you could just go ahead and put yourself on the record. And
sure. Go. Mr. Chairman, I'm Andy Hemingway. I'm an administrative law judge with the Office of Administrative Hearings. The Office of Administrative Hearings has, I think it's 10 administrative law judges. We conduct hearings for virtually every department. They range in complexity from hundreds of millions of dollars at stake in the SARB hearings that are going on right, or will be going on shortly, pension and PERS cases, child support, permanent fund dividend, procurement disputes, taxes. So it's and we've recently started doing the Department of Health and Human Services fair hearings caseload in public benefits. So it's a very diverse caseload. Occupational licensing is another major part of it. So it's a very diverse caseload. It ranges from fairly straightforward, very focused matters with relatively simple set of rules to apply to very complex statutory and regulatory matters with a great deal of factual complexity on top of it. So it's just a very diverse set of hearings that we do. In virtually all of the caseload, we do not make the final decision. There's a couple of narrow areas where the Office of Administrative Hearings makes the final decision. In most cases, our vast majority of our cases will go up to typically the commissioner of whatever department we're doing the case for, or for occupational licensing to a board or commission that regulates the particular profession that that had the case. So in this legislation, what strikes me right off the bat is just what I think I heard from Mr. Brooks and from the commissioners for the CFEC. One of the big questions is who is going to make the final decision and how is that going to happen? Effectively, what this legislation does is it takes away the three commissioners who are charged with oversight of all final decisions and delegates that or changes that function to, actually I don't think it's spelled out in the legislation, it might be the commissioner or it might be a deputy, but it would not, we would expect, be the Office of Administrative Hearings. And that's a significant policy decision as to exactly how that final decision would be made and by whom. In the OAH process, under our statutes, the administrative law judge issues a proposed decision. The parties have the opportunity to respond to that in writing, and then the proposed decision, along with the comments, are sent up to the final decision maker, who issues the final decision. Sometimes in consultation with the administrative law judge to assist in writing the final decision. But so that's our process from a hearing standpoint, a functional hearing standpoint. I would expect that the hearings that we would conduct for under this legislation would be substantially within the ballpark of the types of hearings we do right now, that's what I can tell you from the brief review I've had to this point. If you have any questions.
Well, thank you. I had so there's not a procedure for like a three-judge panel or anything like in the Ninth Cert or anything.
No,
like
Mr.
That
Chairman, that's correct. You have a single administrative law judge who takes the evidence, listens to any testimony, and writes the proposed decision. That's provided to the parties, and then it's sent up to a final decision maker, which could be the board or commission, which of course is a multi-member body, but typically it would be just the commissioner. Sometimes the commissioner would delegate those final decisions to a deputy, and the deputy will be in tune with the mission of whatever agency it is and may be exercising some policy oversight, but it's up to the department to decide how they want to handle that process.
Okay, great. So in this kind of case, we'd have to talk with a fish and game, but I would be presuming that we'd have a director of a division, and that could be the kind of thing that might be delegated to somebody specific in that handling with that by the commissioner of fish and game. Could be a model.
It would be up to the legislature to decide that. I mean, typically, as I said, most of our cases go to the commissioner, and then the commissioner decides if they want to delegate it out to one of their deputies. We do have cases, sometimes the commissioners will delegate the final decision making authority to the Office of Administrative Hearings if nobody has objected. If there's no proposal for action, nobody has raised a complaint, then That way it doesn't have to go through that extra do loop. But, again, that's entirely up to the commissioner.
Well, good. Does anybody have any questions for the Office of Administrative Hearings? I think this is the first time since we changed the law that I've heard from the Office of Administrative Hearings. So it's good to get that perspective as well. So seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And let's see, we have Vanette. The AG's office, Vanessa, do you have, would you like to? Does anyone have any questions for the AG? So I think that we've, you know, Representative Olson had to go. He had to chair another meeting at 9 o'clock. And what I think we've accomplished our purpose for this meeting of getting the issue on the table so people in the different departments can think about it. Everyone knows that we're looking at a kind of a performance audit request for a legislative audit, not financial, not saying anything wrong, looking at prospectively if there's a organizational way to make the more efficient or maybe not. And that's the stage we're at, and I really appreciate everybody's attention to this. And again, you know, if this would go forward, it could go either go forward through the legislature or through the administration organizing departments as well. And so there's nothing in this that precludes anything from or channels anything. It's simply to make sure that we get the issue looked at so that as budgetary constraints hit us, we have a decision-making process, not a quick jumping reaction that might take us and put us in hot water. So with that, this is the final meeting of House Fisheries for the 28th Legislature, and I appreciate everybody's attendance, and thank you very much to the committee, and we will adjourn at 9:02.